Wanted to ask you, looked like Coach got on you a little bit after that timeout, and then you came out and got a couple of tip-ins and a block. Just your reaction to that, and if you want to let us in on what he told you, that's fine. If not, no worries.
I mean, Coach is not really called getting on. He really just calling me up. You know, that's not calling me out. He know what I can do, and he know how I can affect the game. And, you know, just I just call it reassurance, to be honest, knowing what I'm capable of and knowing that I am the anchor of this team on the defensive end. So, you know, just letting me know, like, come on, D.A., you know, basically cussing with me, to be honest. And, you know, that's, you know me, that's what motivates me. That's what keep me going. That's what wake me up.
So you just heard DeAndre Ayton, the Phoenix Suns star center, talk about how head coach Monty Williams doesn't call him out, he calls him up. This is the type of leadership that we all aspire to, where we can be tough on our players, where we hold them accountable, but they only really see it as us believing in them. They feel more inspired by it. In episode 201 of the Coaching Culture Podcast, we actually broke down a mic'd up conversation between Monty and DeAndre in last year's finals. So check that out. And in the last episode, episode 239, we talked with Monty Williams about his journey into coaching. Be sure to check that one out if you haven't as well. In this episode, we're back with more Monty, and Monty is going to go into how he has evolved as a leader and some of the important principles and ways that he leads his team, the Phoenix Suns, which is currently the most dominant force in the NBA. Welcome back to the Coaching Culture Podcast. If you're new, welcome. My name is JP Nurbin. I'm the founder of TOC Culture Consulting, where we coach coaches, helping them grow as leaders and build their team's culture in a systematic way. Every week, I am joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson, on this podcast. Be sure to give us a follow if you don't already. Each week, we share practical strategies and tools to strengthen relationships, raise standards, and improve your team's performance. And we try to do it in around 30 minutes. You can get the notes to this episode and every episode of the podcast by subscribing to our weekly newsletter at tocculture.com. Now, we're going to get back into our conversation with Monty, but we're going to pick up kind of where he was talking about how getting fired in New Orleans was something that he was actually grateful for, as well as some other failures and struggles in his coaching career. Here's Monty.
I'm grateful for some of the times that I didn't have success, because had I had that success, my identity would have been in that. Through being fired and some of the failures I've had, it's forced me to understand that my identity is in Christ and that will never change.
Love that, because I think it kind of ties in with what you've kind of alluded to, is this, you've started to change your coaching, right? You said the way that you, some of the ways that you were coaching in New Orleans were not aligned with your beliefs system or what you claim to believe. But the first change, it seems like it was this kind of heart posture change where you started to really, once again, start to really reframe and rethink, well, hey, where do I get my identity from? And while we may say it's Christ, it is something else. It's the scoreboard, it's the achievement, it's the title, it's the position, right? And all those things. So my question for you here is, your players talk often about, former players, current players, just about the change that you've gone through as a coach and maybe some of your behaviors or the way that you lead. I'm curious, from your perspective, how are you different now? You know, now that you've had that you've gone through this change, how are you different?
You know, it's weird. I hear guys talk about it. I hope that I don't sweat the small stuff that I used to sweat. I had a player one time say, "Man, coach, you don't cuss at us, man, but sometimes you make us feel real small." And that bothered me. When I was in New Orleans, I had a player tell me that. I asked a few guys that I coached that would tell me the truth. And I said, "Look, you know, you got free rein to just tell me what you want. How could I be better? How, you know?" And I had one of the guys say that to me. He said, "Man, you just, some days, coach, I just didn't feel free to be myself around you." And I realized to a degree that there was a lot of high and mighty, self-righteous behaviors that were being broadcasted to the team from me. And I didn't even realize it for the most part. And a couple of my prayers when I was out of coaching and didn't have a head job, I said, Lord, if I ever get a chance to, you know, coach again, I wanted to be in a job where I was excited to, you know, go to work every day. But I also wanted to never have players feel like that around me. And I think as coaches, and especially coaches who, you know, say that we're Christians, we have to be really careful of the things we say or how it comes off to younger people that may be dealing with things, or young people that look up to us, and the words we say and the actions we broadcast can, you know, sometimes put them in a box or sometimes make them feel like they can't be themselves. And I hope that I'm more accepting of, because that was not my intention. You know, I've always been an encourager. I've always been the guy that, you know, rallied the locker room and was the glue of the teams that I was on. But I think when I got into coaching, especially a head coach the first time, I was so focused on culture and not so much people. And sometimes we get so focused on culture that we forget that culture is driven by people. And if you don't, you know, if you're not focused on the people and serving the people, the culture is going to be limited. You know, you can implement all kinds of strategies and phrases to create a culture. But if the people don't feel like they can be themselves and grow and get better and be them, you know, then the culture is going to have a ceiling on it, in my opinion. And, you know, it's only leadership if people are following you. Otherwise, you're just taking a long walk. And I had to figure out that for me, leadership was going to come through service and not always telling people what they should and shouldn't do or what they, you know, how they should behave and all that stuff. It had to be about, one, me seeking the Lord first and letting Him direct my path, as opposed to just trying to win a game or trying to get guys to fit into my cookie cut narratives or my cookie cut, you know, projections of how they should live their life. And I hope that, you know, at 50 and having been fired and on my second job, that I'm somewhat more aware of that.
Let me follow up on that. You know, as you took over in Phoenix, you were, I think, the fourth coach in a very short amount of time there. You know, they hadn't been to the finals since 93 before last year. And so, you know, everybody, when they hire a new coach, says, we want somebody that's going to come in and change the culture. And certainly that probably is something that needed to happen. But when you kind of describe your philosophy in that way, that really culture starts with people, what did that actually look like for you when you got that job and started to go to work?
I think for us in Phoenix, I tried to spend some time listening to the people that were already there, and try to identify the things that were doable and implement that into the culture. And obviously we have some absolutes that we won't budge on. You know, time is something that we feel like we all should respect. So we have to show up on time every day, playing hard and competing is an absolute. You know, you can, if you can't compete and play hard, we got no shot. Defending is something that we felt like, you know, we hear it all the time, defense wins championships. So that was a part of our culture piece. And sharing the basketball was something that we felt like would help. That all came from just listening to the people that were there and having really good conversations with the players that were going to be with us going forward. But then the last piece was something that I thought I should add, just gratitude, understanding that this is a get to and not a got to. You know, we get to be in the NBA. We get to, you know, do what we do every single day. We get paid. It's not a got to. It's not a right. And those were things that I felt like would help this particular program, totally different than what we did in New Orleans. Everything we did in New Orleans was all basketball related, all court related. I think after listening to the people and understanding that I was coming into a program that wasn't broken, there was some strengths and some good people there. The Lord has allowed us to create an environment where people feel like they can get better every single day. But I feel like we have an environment where even when they're not their best, they feel safe. And that was a culture piece that we wanted to not necessarily write down, but we wanted to support. And everything outside of that was negotiable. You know, I'm probably a lot less rigid on things that really don't matter, you know, even if it doesn't line up with my paradigm. You know, a lot of guys like to wear jewelry in practice, or, you know, wear certain gear in practice. When I came into the league, that just wasn't a part of the deal. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. You know, for me, it's like, what are the absolutes in our culture? As long as we all adhere to that, I'm good. Then everything else is negotiable. And I think if you have, you know, good people, high character people that are driven, you don't necessarily have to, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, enforcing things that don't matter, because they already understand, like, this is our culture. And the last thing, Nate, is, you know, I didn't want a culture that I was building. I wanted a culture that we were going to build. And so there are times where a player will say, "Coach, the culture you've created." And I'm like, "Oh, hold up." I'm like, "We created this." And I think that gives them ownership. Because, you know, we'll be in a game and a player will want to run a play. And it may be different than the play I want to run, but when they come to me, I know they've thought about it, and I'm like, okay, you run it. And that gives them ownership. Well, I think the same thing can be said about culture. It's like, when we do this, when we build this, that gives them ownership of the program. And my hope is that, you know, after I'm gone and, you know, done my time here in Phoenix, that some of the culture pieces will live on, you know, long after we're gone.
I really could have used that advice around 10, 12 years ago, because when I took over a program, I had this vision, I had the standards, and I was like, here we go, JP's going to build this amazing culture. And everything was about how I needed to fix the problems that were already there. And one of the things I love about your story is there is you were like, there's already a lot of really good things here, you know, and there's actually a great book that a mutual friend of ours and Jack Easterbury shared with me about culture making. And they talk about sometimes we want to come in there, we want to weed out all the bad. And sometimes about start coming in there, first off, acknowledge the good and cultivating the good that's already there. And that's what you really have done so well at Phoenix. One of my questions for you on that is that word of gratitude, right? That one is it sounds good and you could throw it up on the walls there, Monty, but I felt it when I was there in Phoenix, you know, back in October. I could feel it in the building. You've helped with the players to cultivate that value within the organization. And I'm just kind of curious how you do that in a league where there's probably a lot of entitlement, you know, when they're making big money and big contracts like that. How have you been able to approach that? Because I know many coaches at the high school and collegiate level really want to get their players to be more grateful.
It's interesting, JP. I'd love to sit here and tell you, like, throw up the Pythagorean theorem and just say, here's how we did it, you know, like, pop, pop, pop. I think it's, you know, the Lord has obviously done some things in our program that are just way above, you know, what I could have asked or think or thought of. But we do. And I try to, throughout the year, be vulnerable in front of the team and just tell them, you know, like, the things that I'm grateful for. You know, I'm grateful for walking into the locker room and Jay, our equipment guy, has put a, you know, box of new gear and new socks. Like when you get NBA socks, you know, like that's an exclusive club. Like no one can go get those socks. And I'm like, I've been around almost 30 years, man. I'm still getting socks. And, you know, I talk about, I try to tell the players how grateful we are for how they compete every day and how they let us coach them. And we spend time talking about the things that we're grateful for. We use that phrase, this is a get to and not a got to. I got that from a pastor that I had in Oregon, Brett Metter. He used to talk about Bible study in that way. He'd be like, the Bible study is a get to and not a got to. And I just kind of transferred it to, you know, what we get to do in the NBA. And then we talk about issues around the world from time to time. You know, we just had a slide up that we put on the screens in our practice site. And we were talking about what's going on in the Ukraine, how many people have died and the issues at hand. And then we put a slide up of all of the American players that were in the Ukraine this past year. And we don't even know if they've made it back home or if they're still there, and how grateful we are to be where, you know, we're in the NBA, but those guys had to go play in the Ukraine. And so I'm hopeful that those types of moments where you're vulnerable or you're talking about world issues, or we try to express that we don't take it for granted that these guys allow us to coach them every day. And maybe that, you know, lends itself to a culture of, you know, being thankful for what, you know, we've been blessed to do.
I want to ask you about a phrase that I've heard you say and has come out in some interviews, especially when it comes to how you're building relationships with players. And that is, you've got to build equity with a guy. And I've heard you say that in a couple of different places. And I wonder if you could just explain, what does that mean, you know, to have to build equity with a guy?
It shows up in different ways. When I first got into coaching, the X's and O's and situational basketball and, you know, side out of bounds, baseline out of bounds, like I was like, man, I got to learn that stuff. But the one way I knew that I could, you know, build equity with players was on the floor and playing with them and playing one-on-one and being there for them late in the evening when they needed to get shots or early in the morning, building that relationship. And that was it, you know, not asking them for anything, or they knew that they could rely on me to help them with their game. And though I call it sweat equity, when you can get out there on the floor and play one-on-one and, you know, that kind of thing, it builds relationship because you're out there with them. And that was how I felt when I was on the USA team as an assistant coach. You know, I had Coach K, Boeheim, Tibbs, Mr. Colangelo. It was like the Sesame Street deal when we were kids. It's like, okay, one of these things doesn't fit. And it was Monty Williams, you know what I mean? I was like, what am I doing here? And the one way that I knew that I could build relationship and, you know, in some way touch the heart of the players was to get out there and play one-on-one with them. And they loved it. I mean, they killed me every day, but I just wouldn't like back down. And they'd be like, Coach Mont, come on, let's go. And I'd be like, holy smokes, man. I'm 40 years old, dude. But over time, I started to see a level of trust come from that kind of interaction. And then as I got into being a bench coach as an assistant, we were trying to build a program in Portland, and we had to do a lot of stuff up there, man. It was, you know, a lot of guys coming over to my house for dinner, doing stuff on the road with them, going out to eat with them, having them to my room, talking about certain things that they were going through. And again, I tried to teach through my failures to keep guys from making some of the mistakes I made, and that built equity with them. And so when I had to get on them, about something they weren't doing from a practical basketball standpoint. I had built up so much trust, I think, with them in areas that had nothing to do with basketball or the X's and O's of our program, that they were willing to allow me to call them up, if you will. But it came from time spent, you know, whether it was in one-on-one sessions on the court, phone calls, text messages, coming over to my house. And, you know, my family's always been the kind of family where our house was a bit of a clubhouse. And so when I was in Portland, we'd have 2-3 players over at a time, and they'd come over and eat, and we'd go outside and goof around. But for me, I was trying to help Nate McMillan build a program, and he had so much on his plate. It was my way of taking a little bit of that off of his plate. But I was also trying to build equity with him so that we could, you know, help the program and help guys with their careers.
I love that. We're going to get you out of here. We got two more. I got one, and then JP's going to finish up here with one more. All right.
Sure.
So I'm curious about this. You're coaching at the highest level of basketball that there is in the world. And, you know, we've talked about the pressures, obviously, you feel to win, and, you know, the media and guys have their dudes and everybody's got their agendas. And, you know, I'm sure that you feel that, all of us feel that, you know, no matter what level we're at, in terms of there's a certain amount of achievement and accomplishment that, you know, it just comes with the job, right? You got to be successful in order to continue. But at the same time, you know, I get the impression that there's a purpose that goes deeper than that for you. And I think one of the challenges, you know, we work with transformational coaches, or we try to encourage coaches to use the game to change lives, you know, is that, yeah, we got to deal with the pressure to be successful, but there's something more there. There's something more meaningful. And I wonder if you can articulate, you know, what's the mission for Monty Williams when he gets up in the morning, you know, and he looks at his schedule and his 3 times a day with the media and all the things you got to do with practice and games. But what's the mission, the purpose that really drives you in coaching?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I don't think I have it down at all when it comes to the balance and understanding, like, or being locked into that mission, like from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, I'm like, man, I really nailed it today. Like, I don't feel that way at all. And I'm not saying that to just like throw out some fake humility or anything like that. I'm just being straight. But I read something that kind of, it lines up with Matthew 6:33. And I got it out of my Tony Evans study Bible. He said, don't worry about locating your purpose if you are seeking after God, because your purpose will locate you. And that's just been the thing that drives, I hope, my heart, my coaching, you know, my fathering, my husbandry, is just like making the mustard seed shallow effort to just focus on the Lord, man. Because if I do that to whatever small degree, I'll be in my purpose, if that makes sense. And I think, you know, I fight it like all of us do. You know, I want to win a championship, and you find yourself like going after, you know, I got this, and we got to go over 2-for-1s, and we got to go over end of game plays, and and that's all the stuff that we have to do. But you know, you guys are talking to a guy that's failed, and you're talking to someone who's been fired, and you're talking to someone who's been in the NBA for a while. I wasn't an all-star. I wasn't a star. I wasn't even a moon dust, okay? I'm just a guy that's kind of hung around, and it's only by the grace of God that I'm here. And when I read this recently, it just resonated with my heart. Like, that's it, you know? There is no balance. It's like this day in, day out. Like, what is God calling me to do today? Serve people, love people, bam, you know what I'm saying? And in that, there's my purpose, and he just adds all the other stuff. Because I'm just being straight with y'all. I walk those sidelines some days, man, and I'm like, I have no idea what to call. I got 3 guys that aren't listening to me right now. I'd rather be fishing on my property in Texas. Yeah. just being straight with you. And then you think about, you know, the Lord just reset your heart. Like, you're on assignment. I got you. Just surrender. And that's hard for men. You know what I'm saying? We want to control everything. We want it to, we want 1 + 1 = 2. You know what I'm saying? And it's a battle for us. You know, it's one of those things that I think if we were totally honest, and I think this is where God wants us to be. Like, we always say, God, family, and then my job. Nah, you know, I'd be the first to tell you, man, that's not for me. It'd probably be my job, my next contract, my next fishing trip, and my family. You know, and God's like 20 places down the list. And I think that's okay, because I think God knows that about us anyway. You know what I'm saying? And the Bible is pretty clear. It says no one seeks after God. And I think when we're vulnerable in front of the Lord that way, he gives us that reset of our heart to make an attempt to put him first. But that's where I hope that I'm going. I'm not saying I'm there yet, but I hope that I get there someday.
It's so funny you mentioned that, God, family, and then, you know, your job or basketball, because I was actually going to ask you about that, because one of the things that I know is, while you may not be perfect, you've shared with me that you do spend time every morning in the Word, studying Scripture, you know, and I know you're pretty disciplined about that, you know. I guess the thing I would ask is there one of the biggest struggles? I think the thing that coaches struggle with the most, no matter the level, no matter whether your level or their high school level, is, okay, there's the hard losses. There's the days you made. There's those times of life where you go through some hard seasons or maybe even lose your job. But the biggest thing in this thing, is it worth it? Is it worth all this effort? Comes down to oftentimes what it costs our family. And I'm just kind of curious, and like you said, you're probably not perfect, that family's number two on the list. But how, over, you know, your life as a coach, have you poured into and tried to fight to maintain that balance? Because it's a tough one for you, man. I'm like any coach in the league.
I think for me, it has come down to carving out time to the point where I have to take time away from my craft, my vocation, my job, and say, I have to make sure I get 30 minutes with the boys in Devos before they go to bed. And it's been life-changing for me. I wasn't someone who would wake up early in the morning and study the Bible. I did Devos most of my life, and those are great. But I watched my first wife, Ingrid, before she went on to be with the Lord, wake up and journal and study and pray. And I was like, I used to be like, that's cool for you, honey. I need my sleep. I got practice. You know what I mean? I do my Devo like lunchtime, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm not judging that at all. But when she went on to be with the Lord, I was away from coaching. I was, you know, had all five of my kids, and I was like, holy smokes, man, this is, and I started carving out that time. And I can tell you straight up, it has been a game changer for me. And the really cool part is, like anything else, like, we do what we want to do as men, you know what I'm saying? And our bodies get used to the things that we want to do, right? And if, no matter what time zone I'm getting, my body just wakes up. But it took a season of forcing myself and setting my clock and doing all that stuff too. And I'm just so grateful for that, you know. And there are dry seasons, man. Some mornings I get up and I'll do my study and I'll read, and I'll be like, I don't know what I just read. But I think, for me, it was so necessary. Again, it just goes back to Matthew 6:33, you know, just making the shallowest effort to put God in a place of preeminence in our life, you know, in my life. has been somewhat of a game changer for me. And then taking time away from film study, you know, how many times can I watch a pick and roll? You know, how many times can I watch a guy get through a screen or, you know, it. And Pop taught us this in San Antonio. He was like, you know, there's way more important things than basketball. And he would tell us, don't ever lose sight of that. And he would remind us about our families and being home for dinner, you know, that kind of thing. It helped me to put rules in place in our program that no one can be in the gym coaching or working players out when it was their family dinner time. That was a rule that we put in, like get out of here, go home, so that you can have that quality time. And I found that God has done some amazing things in my career and in my life. And I don't know if it's because of that. I just know that that was one of the things that I didn't want to slip, is to, you know, just be all basketball. And it's 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I haven't talked to my boys or my girls about the Lord or whatever they're going through. I had to neglect some of the things that dealt with my job.
I love that you bring it back to that personal discipline, though, and that for me, that was a similar experience as carving out that time of first things first in the morning. And I have a better chance of staying on the right path the rest of the day. So I appreciate that. And one thing I'd share too is just to be able to experience and see other coaches when I visit in Phoenix, just other coaches talk about how it was different. You know, they had a level of balance. They got to be with their families that maybe they hadn't experienced elsewhere. So, you know, it's one thing to hear it from you, but then, you know, to also know that's the reality of the situation, or at least what you're striving for as much as you possibly can, you know?
I mean, I got forced into it though. I was in New Orleans, and Mike Malone, who coaches in Denver, was on our staff. And I was at my house one night, and Mike called me about 8:30, 9 o'clock. He's like, hey, Mon, I got the report done. You want me to drop it off? And I was like, what? And I knew that Mike lived across the bridge and on the North Shore in New Orleans, which was about, you know, 30, 40 miles. So I'm like, I said, Mike, where are you? And he's like, I'm at the practice site, coach. And I was like, I looked at my watch. I'm like, Mike, it's like 8:30, 9 o'clock. And he's like, yeah, I've been here just working on my, I said, hold up, Mike. I said, hey, man, you can't do that. Because Jocelyn's going to be mad at me. That was his wife, Jocelyn. He had two beautiful daughters. And I think I remember I'd heard the story about Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, how he had the rule that everybody had to be home around 3:30, 4 o'clock so they could have dinner with their kids. And then if they wanted to come back, they could. And so Mike kind of forced me to do it. And so we put the rule in the next day. Like, I didn't want anybody in the gym after 3:30, 4 o'clock when I knew kids would get home from school. And so that kind of gave our coaches, because I told them, I'm like, look, you guys aren't impressing me by sitting here till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, because I'm not going to be, I'm just telling you. I'm going home. I'm eating with my family. I'm going to watch film. I'm going to do all my stuff. But, like, don't feel like you're impressing me by staying here late, or you think you're going to get an ESPN story about how hard you work, because it won't matter. It's just the way it is.
And that's one of the great things. And that's why, you know, I think there's so many coaches out there like myself that are cheering for you on it, because, you know, you're doing things the right way. That's one of the things I loved about Tony Dungy, is I know he was, I'm going to be different, you know? And a lot of times people are afraid, well, if I do things differently and we go home early, what happens when we don't win? You know, what happens then? You know, and it takes a lot of courage to do that, to be different, to probably break the mold of what maybe, because there's that mentality of like, well, if I'm not working, the other dude's working, right? And we think that's like, well, that means that he's getting better than me. And that's not always the case, you know? So it's a great example. And we just appreciate you coming on here, and I appreciate your friendship and just getting to know you. It's just been, a real treat. And it's been something that we're excited to share with so many other coaches out there, man.
Well, JP, Nate, I'm humbled by the invitation, and you know, you and I have texted a few times. I kind of struggle with this stuff just because, you know, I really want, for me anyway, I hope coaches, I want to see coaches succeed, but I don't feel like I'm that guy, and I don't say that to, you know, again, with the fake humility deal. I know my own personal struggles. I know the things that the public doesn't know. And I'm just blown away that the Lord and his goodness has allowed me to, you know, be in this position. And so I do feel a level of service need to help coaches in a way that I was helped. But I still kind of struggle with, you know, telling other people what they should do or sharing my experiences in a way that's going to help them, especially on a platform like this. So I'm grateful for our friendship and how it's grown. But I also understand that, you know, we're all different and we have, an assignment. Now, the last thing I want to do is have somebody try to be like me and mess up their assignment, you know. Because if two of us are alike, one of us isn't necessary. And we all have a unique path that God has for us. And I hope that the coaches that, you know, hear us talk today understand that, you know, they got to dive into what God has for them. They got to dive into the assignment that is uniquely set up for them so that they can be the best that they can be.
I think there's so much to be said for a guy that's just fighting to figure that out. You know, and I think so many of us need just the encouragement of that, you know, that it's worth the battle. It's worth the wrestling. It's worth the disappointment and still showing up and, you know, trying to be as faithful as we can, knowing we're never going to be as faithful as we probably should be, you know.
And it's okay. You know what I mean? I think that's we probably should have like vulnerability platforms where we really share the things that we're going through. You know, and that's always the struggle for me, because when you have a little bit of success, people want to imitate what you're doing because they think that's going to lead to their success. And that's not always the case. You know, we need to be, if possible, vulnerable about everything we're doing so that guys feel this, you know, freedom to talk about like some of their shortcomings, so you can come to some sort of a solution so that guys can, you know, realize they don't have to be perfect. You know what I mean? It's not about that. You know, we used to always, I don't know if you guys grew up I grew up in the country with my aunts and uncles, grandparents, and, you know, every once in a while, the old person would say, "God don't like ugly," you know, and you grow up thinking like, "Hey, you know, I gotta be," well, it's actually wrong. You know, God does love ugly. And he does love things that are broken and messed up, and he uses those things. But we don't talk about that, you know. We tend to talk about, this is what I did. I watched film for 10 hours, and I came up with 2 plays. And it's like, dude, come on. Man. You know, like, we really, as men, need to start talking about the things that we're struggling with, things that we, you know, really need help with so that we can get the help. You know, because the Bible is pretty clear, iron sharpens iron. And I think when we have these vulnerable times where we share and really get down to the nitty gritty, we may be on course to really having some success and productivity and bearing good fruit.
All right, such an incredibly powerful reminder from Monty today, the importance of walking on our journey with others. If you'd like to learn more about how Nate and myself at TOC Culture Consulting do that for coaches, you can head on over to tocculture.com to learn more. There's also a link in the details of this episode to schedule a call. We have a mentorship coaching program, a community of over 75 coaches all across the globe in all levels in sports. And we have a yearly retreat. That's this year in 2022. It's in July out in Park City, Utah. Incredible experience. Our yearly retreat experience is one that has helped a lot of other coaches out there make this shift, make this change in their coaching, just like Monty Williams did. I have to just say one last thing here, which is this. I just can't thank Monty enough for coming on the podcast. He recorded this after a late night overtime game. He got up the next morning, he dropped his kids to school, and then he came all the way back home to record this episode. So I'm thankful for his time and I'm thankful for his friendship. It's been really special to get to know him. Whether you are an NBA fan or not, follow Monty. His leadership example is definitely worth paying close attention to. Thanks for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast.